Dakota salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at COTA.com/trip planner.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. He's a fellow at the Civitas Institute, Austin, Texas, at the University of Texas. And I ask his attention to news that comes from this version from ABC. The headline: states to have rapid response National Guard units for civil disturbances by January 1st. This is in keeping with an executive order that we're just learning about. The original order was signed in August by the president. A memo of that order, internal memo, it said, is dated October 8th. That internal memo is what the Guardian newspaper obtained, unexplained how it did it. The memo is not now denied by the Department of Defense nor the White House. The idea here is a National Guard is to train as many as 500 troops per state to serve as part of a rapid response force focused on civil disturbance missions. This is, each state will be required to have a force ready by the start of next year to have 500 personnel assigned to the force. In addition, we have details about the training. Under a new plan, those existing forces that already respond to natural disasters and civil disturbances will have more training focused on dealing with civil disturbances to be in line with the executive order. There's much to learn here, but the larger picture is what can be presented as a national domestic army. Richard, a very good evening to you. This is not about cleaning up after a hurricane. The presumption here is the executive order is to speak to what are considered to be demonstrators who can turn violent and resistance in certain states and cities to the executive order of the president and to the will of Congress in the case of undocumented presentation. So what I need to understand is there are various parts of the Constitution that speak to the creation and this and the command and the mission of the militia, capital M in the Constitution, which we read now as National Guard. Does that include the creation of what can be argued to be a national domestic army? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, the problem here is the same one. There are two major ones right off the bat. First of all, the ability to figure out the interactions between the national government on the one hand and the state militias on the other is not given to the president. It is given to the Congress, which has not spoken on this issue. The question as to when you call them up was delegated to the president by statute in 1795. But at that point, it's only calling them up in order to meet one of those insurrections, rebellions, or invasions. Now, the word you use, the second problem is, was disturbance. And that is a vastly broader world. And if you're trying to figure out whether or not there's civil disturbances every time there's a dispute at a traffic stop on a highway, it turns out that's a kind of a disturbance. And so what they're doing is two things. One, they're usurping the role of Congress. And then they're expanding the authorization, because even Congress could not authorize the use of the militia for a situation that would be described as a disturbance. And so if you start looking at the various kinds of cases, the issue has already come up, at least in one sense, on the question about executing the laws of the union, in which there are opinions that go all over the lot. My view is if it turns out that there is a situation where the state law enforcement people cannot handle a situation, or where there's a direct attack on federal property and building, then you could use the militia. But the solution is much more nuanced than the one that Trump is proposing, or Hegseth is proposing in this case, because in those particular situations, the courts can limit where you can go. And in a sense, we can stop the kinds of actions if it turns out that it's abusive in some ways. There's no limitation whatsoever here. So it's part of a campaign by the Trump administration to expand the notion of what is now called commonly the unitary executive, the theory that all executive power resides in the hands of the president, and that there seems to be absolutely nothing that Congress can do to stop him when he makes any particular determination. So the way in which these laws should be interpreted, and traditionally have been interpreted, is the president has a lot of discretion on the way in which he responds to an invasion, but he has no discretion to call anything that he doesn't like an invasion. That's something that's going to be subject to review, and the courts can therefore stop him. If you don't have that last situation, then the president is, in fact, a complete unguided missile because he could declare the emergency and the stuff that he wants to take in order to stop it. I then have to ask is, can anybody stop this? One of the great issues that you have to face is who has standing to stop the president when he issues an executive order?
I have a response, Professor.
Good.
Because the Constitution, I'll be very detailed here. Everybody get out your copy. Article 1.
I've got
Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15, and Clause 16.
Yes.
Congress has the authority, not the chief executive. It's Article 1, for heaven's sakes.
This
is congressional authority only, without consulting, without being assigned by Congress. My reading, and I'm an amateur, is that the president cannot presume he has the authority unless Congress accedes to that presumption. Is that correct, Professor?
That's correct. I'll tell you what the loophole that the president is always going to do, and it starts with the tariff cases and extends everywhere else. He will find some general statute like the 1795 Act, and he says what those statutes do is delegate to him the complete authority to do anything so that Congress is already accepted to what he's going
to do. That's fine, but that has to be resolved by the courts.
Well, that's the standing issue that I just was to mention. Because the standing issue in these kinds of cases runs as follows. He's going to give this order. And now you go to any blue state, say California, and the governor is going to say, look, I'm in control of the militia here unless it's been called up.
That's accurate. By the way, I underline the fact that the governor, it's the governor's militia.
Yes. And in fact, you know, many years ago, I actually worked for the militia in cases involving their appropriation. And I had the rare experience of meeting with the National Guard military people at a fort in Chicago near O'Hare Airport to instruct them on how to deal with various situations.
Governor Newsom and Governor Pritzker, let's put a face on it.
Yeah, so those two guys, then, when they get the order, they can say no. At this point, the only way in which the president can do this is to go to court, and my guess is he will lose because of the two things that I mentioned. One is it's to Congress to decide, and two, that a disturbance is not in any event a militia. And I think that what one really has to worry about is the question of how much discretion is going to be afforded to the president on these issues. He wants total discretion, saying everything's been delegated to me. He also wants that, by the way, when it comes to arrests and convictions and various stuff like that. He doesn't believe in due process. And so the issue here is a very concerted effort for somebody to try to take over the entire operations of the United States on the defensive front. And a congressional statute is not the same thing as an executive order. And the executive order cannot expand the power of the president over what's on. You also mentioned that this was done in secret. That's even more ghastly, because the whole point about a law is that they have to be public so they can be debated and objected to. But could you imagine the situation where what he does is in secret makes all the various cooperative states do this sort of thing and nobody has a chance to publicly debate it? I mean, there's a real authoritarian streak in both Hegseth and Trump. And it seems to me that the first thing that the public ought to do is to challenge him, at least to make this a matter of political concern, rather than simply rolling over and die and assume, in fact, that he has all these particular authorities. So I regard this as very, very dangerous. In fact, the entire Trump administration, it seems to me, suffers from this by saying that its powers can negate Congress by presuming delegation and get rid of trials for individuals who are afflicted by saying, in effect, all this stuff is non-justiciable. So I'm not a real fan of this particular
point. Let me point the finger at another institution. The Supreme Court has not been careful in its decisions over the last 240 years about the militia and the power of the militia. So It is to the court to resolve these conflicts in the record. You mentioned in 1795, there are debates that took place in the Virginia legislature before the Constitution was approved in 88 and 89 that speak to this same matter. It needs to be resolved. It is not now what is the power of the president to call it forth, and what is the power of the governor to say no is not at all accurately defined.
Well, I'll go back to something you haven't mentioned, which is the Selective Service Act cases of 1917. And what the president did there, Wilson, is he simply drafted every member of the militia and said, you're now a member of the United States Army. And the argument was, you can't possibly do this. The militia is governed by very specific rules. And when it went to court, it wasn't the standing doctrine that was decided. It was essentially called a political question by Justice Pitney, a pretty strong libertarian. He says, we don't want to get involved in these things at all. So the question is that going to carry over? And I think the answer should be no. What you do is you give maximal discretion to the president when you're in the middle of fighting a war. In this place, it was obviously World War I. You're not fighting a war today. And so what happens is the level of discretion that a president gets is reduced because the emergencies that would prompt the use of that discretion no longer exist. And that was the result of a very fine decision actually issued by the Seventh Circuit, because there had been an earlier case in which it had been held that the courts could not, at the instance of a member of the militia, decide whether or not the president can haul them up. But this was in the middle of the War of 1812 when the British were sacking Washington, D.C. And the Supreme Court said, this is not a case where an individual person is refusing to serve. This is a case where there's a principled objection at a time when there's not war. So the precedent does not apply. But the president will push that all the way to the end. My guess is he should lose on that. The difficulty is I read Supreme Court cases on the unitary executive. The Supreme Court has gotten very, very wishy-washy on this kind of stuff. I just read a case concerning the patent law in which the question was whether or not the president could fire the judges who were put on the patent court. And the answer was, well, if they're in the executive branch and they're judges, you could fire them at will. Well, the correct response is if they're supposed to be judges, then the president cannot fire them at will, because otherwise judicial dependence is going to be lost with respect to a court that has the final power to make judgments that are subject to appeal and have to be reversed in order to be undone. So I don't think the Supreme Court is doing a particularly good job on this. The unitary executive theory is wildly overstated. It works to its best in those cases where you have a president who wants to fire a secretary of the treasury or a secretary of defense slash war, and he can do that. But to say that he could fire anybody else because he has the power to fire his key confidant is to me wildly overreading the Constitution. The president's job is to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. His job is not to simply invent whatever law he wants.
Right, Richard, we have another story we must attend to.
Good.
Because it's also the power of the presidency, and the courts are not, to my reading as an amateur, clear about this. The power to declare war or to conduct the U.S. policy as a war fighting as opposed to criminal behavior. Of course, I'm speaking of Venezuela. When we come back, this is CBS Eye on the World with Richard Epstein. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
COTA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at COTA.com/trip planner.